The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's start off with a couple giggles to the beginning of this program. There's a picture of a cartoon of a man sitting on a street corner. He's wearing a white shirt and a tie and black pants, but he's sitting down on the side of the thing, up leaning up against a building, and he has what looks like a hat on the ground with some loose change and a couple bills in it. And the sign next to him says, "Accidentally hit reply all." That can be fatal. Our company gives out Thanksgiving turkeys to retired employees. All they have to do is stop by the plant to pick them up. A few days before the holiday, a retiree called to ask, "What time do the turkeys get in?" The receptionist, without thinking, responded, "Everyone starts at 8. Pearls of wisdom, D-U-M-B, from less-than-stellar students. I had a girl in my class guess how long it would take for a submarine to travel from Florida to California, going underneath the country. I had a student who wrote an art history paper about Leonardo da Vinci. I walked into a classroom where the professor was in the midst of an angry lecture on plagiarism because one of his students had turned in an essay that started with, "In my 25-plus years of experience in this field, I teach French." I'd given everyone in class a lengthy piece of French homework. One student put the entire sandwich into Google Translate. But it translated it into Spanish. Hard to believe, but many of our customers at the bank still don't know how to swipe their card through the ATM card reader. One teller complained that she kept getting an odd look every time she explained how it's done. I found out when I overheard her tell one man, "Strip down facing me." On The Late Show, Paul McCartney told James Corden how he and John Lennon wrote the Beatles hit "She Loves You" in McCartney's childhood home. "We were just finishing it up, John and I, and we were like, 'Oh, that's it. Let's play it for my dad.' So we say, 'Dad, Dad, you want to hear a song?' So we sing, 'She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah.' And he listens to the whole thing. Then he said, 'That's very nice, but son, there's enough of those Americanisms around. Couldn't you sing 'She loves you, yes, yes, yes'?" I asked a patient to write the Medicaid number from his card on his form. This is what he wrote. The Medicaid number. Page Turners. Four librarians share conversations that made their days. During story time, I read a book that mentioned donuts growing on trees. Me, I want to live in a world where donuts grow on trees. Child, I want to live in a world where bananas grow on trees. A patron's question for the reference desk. Can you come and get a raccoon out of my house? A patron came up to the desk to check out a book. Me, I'm sorry, but you won't be able to check it out since you owe $173. Man, $173? That's how much I weigh, too. A 6-year-old girl asked me, "Do you have any books about how to make boys cry?" The Secret Lives of Letters. They may be small characters, but there are amazing stories behind all 26 alphabet all-stars. A. The Capital. A hasn't always looked the way it does now. In ancient Semitic languages, the letter was upside down, which created a symbol that resembled a steer with horns. B. Grab paper and pen and start writing down every number as a word. Do you notice one missing letter? If you kept going, you wouldn't use a single letter in B until you reached 1 billion. C. Benjamin Franklin wanted to banish C from the alphabet, along with J, Q, W, X, and Y, and replaced them with 6 letters he'd invented himself. He claimed it would simplify the English language. D. Contrary to popular belief, the D in D-Day does not stand for doom or death. It stands for day. The military marks important operations and invasions with a D as a placeholder. So June 5, 1944 was D-I. E. Meet the Smith of the English language. E is used more than any other letter. It appears in 11% of all words, according to an analysis of more than 240,000 entries in the Concise Oxford English Dictionary. I wonder who did that. F. Anyone educated in today's school system knows that the lowest grade you can get is an F. The low water mark, however, used to be represented by the letter E. When Mount Holyoke College administrators designed a grading system in 1898, professors worried that students would think the grade meant excellent. F, more obviously, stands for fail. G. Both G and C were originally represented by the Phoenician symbol gimel, which means camel. It was the Romans who finally separated the two letters, letting C keep its shape and adding a bar for the letter G. H. The Brits have long had an H hang-up, according to Michael Rosen, author of Alphabetical, How Every Letter Tells a Story. They pronounce H in two ways, Eich and Heich. Accents that drop the H from words were once considered lower class, Rosen writes, and in Northern Ireland, pronunciation distinguished Catholics, Heich, from Protestants, Eich. I. Funnily enough, the dot over the letters I and J has a funny-sounding name. It's called a tittle. I didn't know that. That's kind of cute. J. This is one of the two letters that do not appear on the periodic table. Q is the other. Invented in the 1500s by an Italian, J was also one of the last letters to be added to the alphabet. K. With the possible exception of L, see below, which we'll read next, K is the most notorious letter in sports. It's how baseball fans record a strikeout. When the first box score was written back in 1859, S was used to indicate a sacrifice. K was plucked from the end of the struck. L. The National Football League has traditionally used Roman numerals to denote the number of the big game. But for the 50th Super Bowl, they decided to go with just the number 50. Why? Sports fans use the letters W and L as shorthand for win and loss. Because the Roman numeral for 50 is L, the NFL worried that the Super Bowl L would be, in PR terms, a big loser. M. You can't say the letter M without your lips touching. Go ahead and try it. I bet you just did. N. The letter N was originally associated with water. The Phoenician word N was nun, which later became the Aramaic word for fish. In fact, the capital N got its shape because it was a pictorial representing of a crashing wave. Well, that makes sense. Only four letters, A, E, I, and O, are doubled at the beginning of a word. I'm sorry, that's A, E, L, and O, are doubled at the beginning of a word. Aardvark, eel, llama, ooze, etc. And more words start with double O in English than in any other pair. P. This may be the most versatile letter in English. It's the only consonant that needs no help in forming a word sandwich with any vowel. Pap, pop, pep, pip, pop, 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 pip, pip. One out of every Q, one out of every 510 letters in English words is a Q, making it the least common letter in the English alphabet, according to a concise Oxford English Dictionary analysis. R, sometimes referred as the literary canina or the canine letter, because Latin speakers trilling it sound like a growling dog. R gets a shout-out from William Shakespeare in Romeo and Juliet when Juliet Nurse calls the letter the dog's name in Act 2, Scene 4. S. The English alphabet briefly includes a letter called a long S. Used from the late Renaissance to the early 1800s, it resembled the letter F, but was pronounced as an S. You see it in various manuscripts written by the Founding Fathers, including the Bill of Rights. T. The term T-shirt refers to the shape of the garment's body and sleeves. E. Scott Fitzgerald is believed to be the first to use the term in popular culture. In 1920, when the main character of his novel, T, His Side of Paradise, I'm sorry, they spaced this word wrong, This Side of Paradise brings a T-shirt with him to the boarding school. U. Before the 1500s, U and V were used interchangeably as a vowel or a consonant. A French educational reformer helped change that in 1557 when he started using U exclusively as a vowel and V as the consonant. V. This is the only letter in the English language that is never silent. Even usually conspicuous letters such as J and Z are silent in words that we have borrowed from foreign languages, such as marijuana, originally a Spanish word, and laissez-faire, French. W. Ever wonder why we call it a W-U instead of a W-V? The Latin alphabet did not have a letter to represent the W sound of Old English, so a 7th-century scribe just wrote it as U-U. The W symbol eventually meshed together to form the letter W. X. From X marks the spot, to solve for X, this is the go-to letter to represent something unknown. The idea is believed to have come from mathematician René Descartes, who used the last three letters of the alphabet to represent unknown quantity in his book, The Geometry. He chose A, B, and C to stand for known quantities. Y. The switch hitter in the alphabet. Y functions as both a vowel and a consonant. The Oxford English Dictionary actually calls it a semi-vowel because the letter stops your breath in words such as yell and young, making it a consonant. It also creates an open vocal sound in words such as myth or hymn. Z. Believe it or not, the letter Z has not always been the last letter of the alphabet. For a time, the Greeks had Zeta in a respectable place at number 7. After all, we say alpha and omega, so omega was the last letter in the Greek alphabet. Health and medicine. 34 things you need to know about arthritis. This painful joint disease is actually a collection of more than 100 ailments, and it affects people of all ages. Then there's a picture of a cartoon of a lady standing there with dots on her shoulder, her elbow, her wrist, her hips, her back, her knees. Arthritis. The word makes you think about older folks with creaky knees and jumbo bottles of ibuprofen. Hey, that's me. You need an update. Arthritis now strikes an estimated 91 million American adults, according to a new study. And 30% of them are ages 18 to 64. By far the most common type, which affects 57% of Americans with arthritis, is osteoarthritis, followed by gout, 27% of cases, psoriatic arthritis, 14%, and rheumatoid arthritis, 3%. There is no cure for any of them, but scientists have made several breakthroughs in understanding how to treat the inflammation and pain that come with the condition, as well as how to halt the underlying joint damage. The first line of defense, educate yourself. Osteoarthritis. The wear and tear of the cartilage cushion between joints that can often cause, and in some cases results from, chronic inflammation. Number 1. Old-fashioned x-rays are the best diagnostic tool. A Washington University study noted that x-rays can diagnose OA as accurately as a magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, and they do it faster and more cheaply. Identifying arthritis early gives you time to turn to lifestyle changes before irreversible damage is done to your knees, the most common pain point, or other joints. 2. The customary treatment for OA doesn't repair joints. Up to 85% of osteoarthritis sufferers try non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, such as ibuprofen, though they can be effective at getting you through the day, says Kelly Allen, Ph.D., a researcher at the Thurston Arthritic Center. They don't protect joints from progressive damage and may have serious side effects. Number 3. When people with osteoarthritis use NSAID gels, drops, or tachys, have said their pain fell by 50% or more over 12 weeks. Because these versions are rubbed into your skin, less of the drug gets into your bloodstream, which reduces the risk of gastrointestinal bleeding, heart problems, and other side effects. That said, do not use these topical treatments if you have kidney disease or are also taking oral NSAIDs. Number 4. A 2018 study of 240 osteoarthritis patients showed that those who took opioids were in slightly more pain after a year than those who took non-opioid medication. The researchers aren't sure why, but given that these drugs can be very addictive, they recommended against opioids. Number 5. Arthritis hurts your heart by contributing to chronic inflammation, reducing physical activity, and increasing NSAID use, all factors in cardiovascular risk. All told, researchers estimate that OA boosts your odds for heart disease by 24%. Psoriatic and rheumatoid arthritis raise the odds even higher. Number 6. Australian researchers have reviewed evidence for top 20 top-selling herbs and dietary supplements used to treat osteoarthritis, concluded that 3, Boswellia serrata extract, pine bark extract, and curcumin are the most effective in reducing inflammation and pain in the short term. 7. Cortisone injections don't help in the long term. A single shot can ease pain, says Timothy McLaughlin, MD, MPH, Chief of Rheumatology at Tufts Medical Center. But a recent study found that repeated shots of cortisone, a steroid, not only didn't control pain, but also led to more joint damage. 8. The jury is still out on other injectable treatments. Hydrochloric acid injections are designed to add more shock-absorbing fluid to the joints, but research on their effectiveness is mixed. Similarly, new injectables using your own fat, bone, marrow, platelet-rich plasma, or stem cells promise relief, but Dr. McAlinden says research isn't sufficient to show if they actually work to ease pain and rebuild joints. 9. Insomnia is an often untreated side effect of arthritis, but there are fixes. Lack of sleep can intensify sensitivity and pain, a problem for OA patients, according to John Hopkins University study. Cognitive behavioral therapy, which helps change the distorted thinking that can worsen pain levels, has been shown to increase the amount of time OA sufferers slept and presumably decrease their pain. 10. A new device called COOLIEF uses specialized electrodes to send water-cooled radio waves into the tissue around your knee, which temporarily deactivates the nerves. Patients reported greater, longer-lasting pain relief of up to 12 months with COOLIEF than with cortisone injections. 11. Stem cells could save joints someday. Scientists have programmed stem cells to grow new cartilage on a 3D template shaped like the ball of a hip joint. Using gene therapy, they have activated a new cartilage to release anti-inflammatory molecules to fend off a return of arthritis. But the stem cell therapy offered for knee osteoarthritis in many clinics isn't a proven cure. Rheumatoid arthritis, RA. The immune system attacks the fluid that lubricates joints, causing inflammation and destroying cartilage. This is 12 in the list. A new drug could prevent RA. Early results from one study show that for people with mild joint aches and high inflammation levels, one shot of rituximab can cut the risk of developing rheumatoid arthritis in half, the drug blocks production of compounds that trigger inflammation. 13. So could vitamin D. In another study, researchers found that people with low blood levels of vitamin D, which boosts immune function, were at higher risk for RA. One great free source of vitamin D? Sunshine. 14. It's possible to put rheumatoid arthritis into remission. While there's no way to reverse joint degeneration, getting treated within 6 months of the onset of pain and stiffness can curb symptoms to prevent further damage. Unfortunately, a 2016 national survey found that it took people with RA 4 years and visits to have at least 3 different doctors to get a proper diagnosis. 15. Early arthritis clinics are showing great promise. Focused on treating rheumatoid arthritis patient with a recent diagnosis, clinics have opened at the University of Rochester Medical Center, Oregon Health and Science University, and many private facilities. In 1 month, 89% of RA sufferers treated at an early arthritis clinic got disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, DMARDs, in 3 months compared with 50% who got care elsewhere. The clinic's patient had a higher remission rates as a result. 16. Menopause worsens the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis. A 2018 study of 8,189 women in the Journal of Rheumatology confirms something women with RA have long experienced. Joint degeneration speeds up after menopause. Early menopause can trigger the disease, too. 17. Rheumatoid arthritis can raise your risk for certain types of cancer. Lung cancer, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma are more common in people with RA, partly due to the inflammation and partly because RA drugs suppress the immune system. 18. One DMARD does not fit all. DMARDs can put RA into remission, but a drug may stop working after several years. Some people have to try several before they find the one that works best, said David Dalk, MB, THD, outgoing president of the American College of Rheumatology. 19. tumor necrosis factor, TNP, TNF, is an inflammatory procedure responsible for pain and cartilage degeneration in RA. And drugs called TNF inhibitors can sometimes block it. And if one TNF inhibitor, such as Intercept, Enbrel, or adalimumab, Humira, doesn't work, try another. In a recent study, 43% of patients who didn't respond to one type of TNF inhibitor responded positively to a different one. Number 20. Biologic drugs, such as Intercept, Enbrel, Golimumab, Simponi, and adalimumab, Humira, are engineered from human genes. They work by targeting specific parts of the inflammation process rather than suppressing the immune system in general, as older DMARDs do. So they tend to have fewer side effects. Unfortunately, they are also much more expensive than traditional medications. Number 21. Genetic profiling could soon pinpoint which drug classes or even individual drugs will work for you. In a new multi-site study published this May in the Journal of Arthritis and Rheumatology, researchers analyzed joint tissue from 41 rheumatoid arthritis patients to determine which gene variation each individual had and how they responded to each type of drug. Next, they hoped to predict which patients will respond best to specific drugs based on their generic signature, saving time and money. Number 22. Nerve stimulation could reduce joint damage in one small study when patients with rheumatoid arthritis were zapped with mild electrical currents to the vagus nerve, which passes through your neck and to your abdomen. The charge reduced their levels of TNF, the same inflammatory protein targeted by TNF inhibitors. Some also had less swelling and tenderness. Psoriatic arthritis, PSA. An autoimmune disease in which the immune system attacks healthy joint tissue. PSA affects about 30% of people with psoriasis, a condition marked by red scaly patches on the skin. 23. PSA is not RA. Psoriatic arthritis is often misdiagnosed as rheumatoid arthritis, but the cause and many treatments are different. Until 2013, the medications approved by the FDA to treat psoriatic arthritis were RA drugs. Since then, several new treatments for those with PSA have become available. 24. Getting a timely diagnosis can prevent permanent joint damage. In psoriatic arthritis, erosive joint changes can begin within 6 months of the first symptoms, says rheumatologist Sergio Schwartzman, MD. But for many people, there can be a 5-year delay in receiving a diagnosis. A growing number of combined dermatology-rheumatology clinics may help reverse the trend. Number 25. Psoriatic arthritis sufferers are 6 times more likely to have inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, known as Crohn's disease, according to a study of more than 174,000 women. Chronic inflammation underlies both Crohn's and PSA, and some of the medications used to treat arthritis may lead to or exacerbate IBD symptoms. Other PSA drugs, though, can help IBD symptoms. People with PSA are also at a higher risk for diabetes, osteoporosis, kidney disease, and other autoimmune diseases, and many other conditions. Gout, caused by uric acid crystals in joints, most often in the big toe. 26. The number of people diagnosed with gout doubled between 1960 and 1990, and rates have risen about 25% since. The use of certain medications for high blood pressure, especially loop and thiazide diuretics, are among the top reasons for the increase. Foods and drinks rich in compounds called purines, such as alcohol, bacon, and sweets, also contribute to the formation of uric acid in crystals, as does doing overweight and sedentary. 27. Tomatoes, which can increase uric acid levels, could be gout trigger for some people. A study from 2015 found they were the 4th most common food trigger after seafood, alcohol, and red meat. 28. It bears repeating. Cherries can lower the risk of gout attack. In a 2012 study, researchers followed people with gout for a year and found that those who eat either fresh cherries or took cherry extract throughout the year were 37% less likely to have recurrent attacks. 29. Gout drugs can be effective, but they can also have drawbacks. In a 2018 study of more than 6,000 people with gout, those who took Friobovostat were 34% more likely to die from heart disease than people who took allopurinol, another common gout drug. Also, allopurinol can cause liver problems, while other older gout drugs, colicodine, can cause severe diarrhea. The power of healthy choices. New research has proved that these old-time remedies really work. While most studies have been done with osteoarthritis and rheumatoid patients, experts say this strategy will help almost all kinds of arthritis. Number 30, weight loss. In a study of 640 overweight and obese people, those who lost just 5% of their body weight over 2 years had lower rates of cartilage degeneration compared with stable weight participants. 31, fiber. People who ate 22 to 28 grams of fiber per day had a 30 to 61% lower risk for OA-related knee pain. Number 32, fish. One study showed that RA patients who ate fish at least twice a week had fewer swollen tender joints than those who rarely did. 33. Physical activity. Just 45 minutes a week of walking or other easy exercise help people with OA reduce pain and improve joint function in knees, hips, and ankles by 80%. Number 34. Touch and movement therapies. A review of 21 complementary therapies found that that acupuncture, massage, yoga, and tai chi were most effective in increasing OA and RA pain. Drama in real life, lost in the Pacific woods. She set out to scatter her husband's ashes in a national park. Would she make it out alive? And there's a picture of Jane Geer months before she and her dog disappear into Olympic National Park. She's a smiling, gray-haired lady. She's got a red jacket on and blue jeans. Rather attractive. For 34 years, Jean and Jack Geer doted on each other as they moved from San Francisco to Hawaii to finally Port Angeles in Washington State. Then in December of 2016, Jean walked into their bucolic backyard and found Jack crumpled on the ground. Seemingly in perfect health, he had died of a massive heart attack. He was 72. In the following months, Jean devoured books on grief and loss, hoping she would find the will to go on without him. One task she thought she could help. Jack had told Jean that when he died, he wanted half his ashes scattered in Hawaii and half in the Olympics National Park, about a 25-minute drive from their home. So in March 2017, Jean dutifully flew to Hawaii to disperse the first part of Jack's remains in the ocean. But she dreaded the thought of parting with Jack forever. She put off spreading the rest of Jack's ashes until she was ready. That day came on July 17th. Jean, 71, took the urn holding Jack's remains, grabbed Yoda, her 5-year-old 11-pound Chihuahua mix, and climbed into her 2004 Explorer. It was 4 p.m. A slight woman, just 5 feet tall, Jean wore capri pants, and a Hawaiian shirt and canvas espadrilles. No need for a coat on what should be a 30-minute walk. She planned to be home in time to make dinner. With its dramatic peaks and old-growth forest, Olympic National Park covered nearly 1 million sprawling acres. Jean was heading for one special spot off Instruction Point Road, an 8-mile dirt and gravel driveway. She drove in about 3 miles, pulled her Explorer over on an unnamed, tame stretch of road, devoid of signs, and got out. She grabbed her cell phone and the urn, stashed her purse in the car, and locked the doors. And then Jean and Yoda entered the woods. The park features one of the world's most diverse populations of wildflowers, and Jean was on a quest for a blue alpine forget-me-nots. Their beauty, Jack had once told Jean, moved him. When she didn't see any, she walked deeper into the woods and finally spotted a blanket of blue through a small opening in the trees. Relieved, she walked to the flowers and distributed Jack's ashes. She said a quiet blessing and turned to leave. Then she paused. Had she come in this way or that? Where was the trail? Jack would have laughed. He frequently teased her about her terrible sense of direction. His nickname for her was Wrong Way Jean. She saw a hill and headed towards it. If she could make it to the top, she could scan the horizon and spot Obstruction Point Road. Her shoes, which had smooth treads, were ill-suited for the climb. Yoda ran ahead while Jean struggled to maintain her balance. She slipped, dropped the urn, and watched it roll over the edge of the hill and tumble into a gully. Joan crept her way to the slope's side. She spotted the dark plastic urn, barely visible in the underbrush. She hated abandoning anything related to Jack, but the steep hillside was too dangerous to navigate. She eventually made it to the top of the crest, where she saw nothing but trees and more hills. She had been gone from home for a few hours, and it was getting dark. She reached for her cell phone to call for help. No service. Thirsty, Jean needed water. She randomly picked a route, pushing her way through underbrush and branches that cut and pricked her, till she came upon a small creek. She and Yoda drank deeply. As night fell, Jean was chilled by an awful realization. She would spend the night in the woods. She had heard stories about people who had died in the park, including one who had been mauled by a bear. Just stay calm, she thought, forcing herself to focus on the task ahead. The first things first, she needed a place to sleep. She spotted a downed tree about 7 feet in diameter that had fallen on a big rock next to the creek. The space beneath was large enough to shelter her for the night. She crawled under the log and lay there. Yoda snuggled close, warming her as the temperature dipped into the 40s. An experienced camper, Jean wasn't frightened by the forest's strange noises or creepy crawlies, but her predicament did keep her awake. To distract herself, she thought about the dinner she planned, but wouldn't get to eat. Noodle soup with pork and vegetables and fresh cherries for dessert. And she thought of Jack. Jean recalled the first time she'd laid eyes on him. It was 1982. Armed with her MBA, she had applied for a job at a San Francisco bank, where Jack served as vice president. After she was hired as an assistant vice president, Jack took her to lunch to congratulate her. Mutually attracted, they began to date, fell in love, and were soon married. Thinking about Jack made her calmer, allowing her to conclude that if she could make it until daylight, she'd find her way out. At dawn, Jean left the shelter, forging her own trail through the underbrush, with Yoda now trying to keep up with her. At home, Yoda had the run of nearly 5 acres where he chased deer and explored, but this adventure was different. The bushes were high in many places, and he had to tunnel through. With his short legs, he couldn't jump over the logs. Discouraged, he'd yelp for Jean, but Jean couldn't carry him. It taxed her strength, and she might fall. Yoda was on his own. Jean, meanwhile, was fighting her own battles with panic. So much could go wrong in the wilderness for even a young, able-bodied hiker, but for a septuagenarian, the perils were magnified. Crossing over slippery rocks, she worried she'd fall and break a leg. She avoided ravines, knowing that if she plunged into one, she could never climb back up. Before she knew it, another day had passed. Her chances of being rescued had not improved. As night fell again, Jean and Yoda found another fallen tree to sleep under. The next morning, her third day lost in the park, Jean had given up on finding her way out. She'd read stories about people who endured in the wild, and the rules of survival were simple. Find a water source, don't get injured, find an open spot to make it easier for rescuers to find you, and stay put. By mid-afternoon, Jean had scouted out the place she called home for however long she needed it. She found 2 trees that had fallen next to each other. She used branches to build a roof and to close off one end of the space, leaving an opening for a doorway. Inside, she stacked branches to use at night to close the opening. She used moss to make the ground softer. At the end of the day 3, Jean and Yoda entered the 8-by-5-foot shelter, and she settled in. So many thoughts, some absurd, ran through her head. She bought tickets with a friend to go on an October cruise that would take them to Greece, Italy, and Spain. Would she get to go? And then there were those cherries. She couldn't stop thinking about them. The next day, her fourth day lost, Jean settled into her survival routine. Several times over the course of the day, she made her way down a steep hill to drink water. Taking care not to fall, she dug her heels into the ground and clung to bushes. She tried building a fire by gathering dry pine needles and rubbing small stick against a stone, hoping the stick would get warm enough to ignite. It failed, but she kept trying. Starving, she ate wild currants, tender pine needles, and even ants, which had a lemony taste. Yoda, for his part, impressed Jean with his newfound ability to snatch flies out of the air and dig up grubs for dinner. By 4 p.m., Jean and Yoda had climbed into her shelter. Despite the moss, the hard ground was miserable, and the cold was embedded in her bones. But she wasn't giving up. Although Jack had taken care of her for so many years, Jean now harked back to a time when she hadn't been dependent on anyone. Shortly after World War II, her family had moved to the United States from China. At school, kids would hurl racial slurs and start fights with her. Her father had sat Jean down and offered this advice. You're a little person. You won't be strong physically. You must be strong internally. Somehow, someway, he was saying Jean had to take care of herself. Hungry, tired, and growing weak, Jean drifted off to sleep, repeating her father's words. And there's a map here showing Jean and her little dog and how they went around and around, apparently, surrounding the whole area. By now, Jean's brother in Seattle had become concerned. Numerous calls to Jean had not been returned, and when he drove 2 hours to her home, there was no sign of her. He contacted the sheriff's office, which sent a missing persons report to all governmental agencies, including an office at Olympic National Park. At 1:30 p.m. on July 22nd, 5 days into Jean's odyssey, a park employee spotted the explorer. He radioed in, setting in motion a series of alerts that ended with Zachary Gray, one of the park's search and rescue operations squad, gathering a handful of searchers to look for Jean. They met at her park explorer. Dust and water spots indicated the vehicle had been there for several days. Searchers walked into the woods calling Jean's name. They found nothing. At 7 p.m., the nightfall approached, the search was halted. The search began the next day at 6 a.m. Gray now had a time of 37 under his command, which he split into four groups heading out in different directions. Still, he couldn't buck the nagging feeling that this would end poorly. 71, Jean was likely disoriented and probably injured. Gray had been on 10 searches already that year. Nearly all of them had ended when the team found a body. At noon, Gray's two-way radio crackled. A researcher had found a plastic urn with Jack Gear's name on the side. Gray had other teams focus on a half-mile radius from where the urn was found. Hours passed. Nothing. Gray radioed to request a helicopter. Once aboard, he searched below where the urn had been found. Jean, he thought, might have fallen into the gully and dropped the urn. Injured, she likely would have continued walking downhill till she either collapsed or died. Flying 300 feet above tree level, Gray saw nothing but a sea of grass. He had another idea. If Jean were somehow alive, she'd need water. He studied the terrain, and far away he spotted a creek. The pilot made two passes, nothing. Wait, Gray thought he saw something move. He asked the pilot to circle back. Then Gray saw a dog. Then a woman with silver hair waving at the chopper. He radioed the team, giving new instructions. From a distance, he watched searchers running to the woman. He saw them hug her. His radio came to life. We have Jean. After 6 days in the wood, Jean's was too weak to walk out on her own. Gray called in a larger Coast Guard helicopter, one that could hoist Jean into the chopper in a basket, while the grand crew carried Yoda out. At the hospital, doctors were stunned that Jean's only injuries were scratches on her legs. Tests revealed that her potassium was low from eating next to nothing for nearly a week. She was released from the hospital that night with a prescription for potassium tablets, which she chased down with a big bowl of cherries. Then rescuers discussed her the search. They talked about the small urn. Without it, they would never have found Jean. Gray is convinced that Jack Gear's spirit protected his wife. Jean doesn't doubt it, but the woman who questioned her will go on without her husband, had found the wherewithal to survive, and with that came a life-affirming conclusion. It's time to let go and let my own light shine and stand up, she told the Seattle Times. This situation forced me to. I realized I had to be on my own and move on to my life. About that pre-boarding rush, everyone who lined up 30 minutes early to board the plane is going to be so mad when we all land at the same time. Now let's do a little bit of consumer reports. Ask our experts, how can I keep my car windows from fogging up in winter? Car windows can quickly steam up in winter when moisture in the warm cabin air creates condensation. To keep windows clear, make sure your climate control system is in fresh air mode. Running it in recirculation mode causes moisture to accumulate. Though it might seem counterintuitive, drivers should turn the air conditioner on. Its compressor dehumidifies the air, which will reduce the chances of windows fogging, and setting to a high temperature should keep the car toasty, too. Recall, Ram pickup truck. Ram is recalling 1.1 million pickup trucks from model years 2015 to 2017 because their tailgates can open unexpectedly, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Affected vehicles include Ram 1500, 2500, and 3500 trucks with a 5 foot 7 inch or 6 foot 4 inch bed and power locking tailgates. What to do? Call 1-800-853-1403 to see whether your truck is affected. 55% of drivers ages 25 to 39 who said they sent a text or an email while driving during the previous 30 days. Ouch. Ahead of the curve, exploding sunroofs update. U.S. Senate probe that followed CR's report on exploding sunroofs found that three automakers, Ferrari, Tesla, and Volvo, are making sunroofs of laminated glass, which is designed to hold its form when shattered. Other car companies continue to make at least some models with tempered glass, which can explode and break into thousands of fragments when it fails. Automakers should fix older cars with the problem and design new ones so they don't have the issue in the first place, says William Wallace, senior policy analyst for Consumer Report Union, the advocacy division of CR, which is pushing for recalls and other solutions. What makes a tire tops? Our comprehensive ratings for car and SUV tires guarantees you won't just spin your wheels when you're comparison shopping. Plus, consult our exclusive Tread Life testing to see which tires last longest. It's hard to overstate the importance of tires in keeping passengers safe and delivering performance. That's why so many consumers in older, colder climates spend the time and expense to swap winter snow tires twice a year to ensure that their two-ton vehicles have the best grips possible. With year-round convenience in mind, manufacturers have introduced an all-weather product category designed to not only perform well in the snow, but also to be a year-round tire for your car. Some cost more than the average price of performance all-season tires, but you'll come out ahead by avoiding the cost and inconvenience of seasonal tire change. The best all-weather tires have proved to provide year-round traction that truly combines all-season and winter snow performance, says Gene Peterson, Consumer Reports Tire Program Manager. While some can cost more than performance all season, they represent a good value. These do-it-all tires offer unique tread designs and enhanced rubber compounds that increase traction across a broad range of temperatures. They're different from typical all-season tires mainly because they provide better traction in the snow. For this reason, they have the same mountain snowflake symbol on the sidewall as winter snow tires. In our latest testing, Consumer Reports evaluated five all-weather models, the Goodyear Assurance Weather Ready, Michelin Cross Climate, Nokian WGR4, Toyo Celsius, and Verdestein Quatrac 5. From this fresh category, the Michelin Cross Climate shined as the top-rated all-weather tire thanks to its uncompromising grip. This impressive but pricey tire is sold in limited sizes by Tire Rack, one of the nation's leading tire retailers. More sizes will be added in the fall. Consumer Reports unique testing. As the tire market evolves, so do CR's testing methods. We replaced our basic covering cornering test with a more dynamic evaluation of acceleration, braking, and handling on a 2-plus-acre course over wet asphalt. This new, all-in-one test better reflects real-world challenges drivers face. Overall, we purchased more than 630 tires this year for our full test program, covering 63 models for all season, performance all season, which includes all weather tires, and winter snow categories. We tested them on our track in Connecticut for wet and dry braking and handling, ride comfort and quietness, snow traction and resistance to hydroplaning. We evaluated each tire grip on ice at a nearby skating rink. We also commissioned outside labs to measure each tire's rolling resistance, which affects fuel economy, and we conducted extensive tread wear tests on public roads in western Texas. Most tires met or exceeded their warranty projections. Even those with a shortfall were usually off by a small amount. Of course, tread life will vary based on where and how you drive. But the T-Speed rated Sumitomo HTR Enhanced L-X missed its warranty projection by 25,000 miles. It has a 90,000-mile warranty but would last only 65,000 miles based on our test projections. According to a Sumitomo representative, customer satisfactions are nearly 100% with the product and mileage warranty. It is our goal to provide top-quality products at affordable prices, the company said in a written statement to CR. On our ratings, tires that underperform their warranty have points deducted from them their overall score. Winter snow tires don't carry a mileage warranty and are intended for limited seasonal use, so we don't assess their tread life. Tire shopping strategies. When buying a new or used car, it's important to consider the tires you're getting with the vehicle and the expected cost, durability, and performance over time. Make sure your new car comes with the right type of tire for your needs. You might need to discuss possible options with the dealer. For example, some vehicles sold in the Snow Belt come with summer tires. All-season tires will be marked with an M plus S, which indicates that they have a tread designed to handle mud and snow. Tires that have a mountain and snowflake symbol on the sidewall meet industry standards for snow traction. Owners should investigate online the cost and difficulty of replacing tires. The tire side is on the sidewall and a sticker on the door jamb on the driver's side. For example, tires on large wheels with short sidewalls can be expensive to replace and make for a rougher ride, among other drawbacks. Tires in a luxury or sports package might be a higher performance tires that are typically more expensive and make wear faster. So make sure you know what you're paying for and whether your less expensive options you should consider. Stay safe on the road. Routine tire checks improve safety and help boost the fuel economy. Perform these checks monthly and before you embark on a long-distance trip. Check your tire pressure. Tires lose air over time. They need to be checked monthly and filled every so often, especially when temperatures drop in winter months. Underinflated tires flex more than properly inflated ones. That builds up heat, which can lead to failure. Plus, underinflated tires are less fuel efficient and can wear out faster. To get a good tire pressure reading, check when the tires are cold, meaning the car has been parked for longer than 3 hours. Consult your owner's manual and the driver's door jamb place card for proper pressure. If you have a spare tire, check its pressure regularly too. Scan the tire sidewalls. Look for cracks caused by age and exposure to the elements. Encounters with curbs, potholes, and other unfriendly objects in the road can lead to cuts and bulges in tires. Replace tires that show any sign of trouble and you'll head off problems before they occur. Check the tire's age. The date code tells you when the tire was manufactured. Look for DOT, followed by several digits near the wheel. The last four numbers identify when the tire was made. For example, 0308 indicates that the tire was manufactured in the third week of 2008. Consult your owner's manual for when to replace it. Some vehicle manufacturers recommend replacing tires after 6 years. Without a limit, we recommend moving tires at 10 years, including the spare, regardless of the condition. Measure tread depth and wear. Grab a quarter and a penny to measure tread depth. Place the quarter upside down in a tire groove with a tread wear indicator, raised bars within some grooves. They will appear flush with the tread when the tire is worn out. The distance from the quarter's edge to George Washington's hairline is about 4/32 of an inch. If you can see all of Washington's head exposed, it's time to start shopping for new tires. You at least still have some grip left. And if there is some space exposed above George's head, check the tire with a penny. Using the same technique, insert that penny into the same groove and point Lincoln's head down. You can see the top of Abe's head over the tread. The tire should be replaced immediately. Many states have made it illegally to use tires with tread that shallow. Do I have to replace all four tires? Conventional wisdom holds that owners of all-wheel drive vehicles should replace all four tires, even if only one is damaged, to ensure even traction and prevent all-wheel drive system damage. Now there's a less expensive option, shaved tires. Owners can buy one tire from Tire Rack, 888-727-8092. And the company will shave it to match the tread of your other three tires for about $25 to $35. It's cheaper than buying four new tires, but shaving a tire is likely to nullify its tread wear warranty. Other retailers may offer a similar service, but the equipment required to properly shave a tire's tread isn't common. And here's some information from the chief editor and president of Consumer Reports. Which deals are real? Growing up in a large family meant that finding real deals was always the top of the mind. Whether it was one clever two-for-one pitch or the Magic World's final sale, my parents bundled us up and off we went in search of the ultimate way to stretch our dollars. There was great pride in knowing that we were not just shopping, we were getting the best value at the best prices. Okay, so maybe that baseball mitt didn't fit exactly right 1 year, but I never lost my appetite for discounts or markdowns. Shopping today takes a little more know-how. From Black Friday sales to time-limited online offers, we are inundated with come-ons that promise big savings and tempt us to ask quickly before deals run dry. So it's no surprise that a rising number of lawsuits pushing back on dubious pricing are being pursued. Even when we suspect that these offers could be too good to be true, it can be hard to pass them up, and harder still to differentiate between legitimately great value and a pricing trick that doesn't really offer much. This month, we break how expertly they navigate the world of discount pricing. You'll find guidance on recognizing deceptive offers, techniques for finding the best deals, and recommendations to help you make the most of emerging world of online browser tools and phone apps. These useful tools can deliver instant cost comparison, aggregate coupons, and alert you to price drops in real time. We'll also take a deeper dive into one of the industries most beset by opaque and ever-shifting prices, the airline industry. As you gear up for holiday shopping, travel, and a frenzy of sales, you deserve to head into the season with the knowledge you need to separate the honest deals from tricks and traps so you can make smart choices and ensure that your hard-earned money goes further than ever before. Let me know how you make out this season in your search for the real deal. Martyr L. Tolato, President and CEO. Building a Better World Together. Alerting consumers about recalls. Here's a statistic that's concerned us all. The average rate at which consumers take action when a product they own is recalled for safety reasons is thought to be a mere 6%. One reason experts believe is that most consumers who own a recalled product simply never hear about the recall. And the reason for that? The system currently in place for alerting consumers about recalled products that they own is out of date and needs to be upgraded for the digital age. How Consumer Reports has your back. CR helped lead a coalition of groups pushing for 2008's landmark Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, which established an online product safety database and required manufacturers of certain products to give consumers registration cards and the ability to register online to be notified in case of a recall. But those requirements aren't enough, which is why CR, with other groups, recently delivered recommendations to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Among them, instead of relying on the product registration forms of old, consumers should have the option at the point of sale to register their purchase and to receive text messages if the product is recalled. And companies that issue recalls on their products should have to provide incentive, such as extra features on a replacement or cash back, to encourage consumer participation. What you can do? You can find select recalls in every issue of CR Magazine. This month, see page 19, which we'll see in a little while. You can also find a full list of our recommendations at cr.org/recalls. Report and search for unsafe products at the CPSC website, saferproducts.gov, and find the latest recalls at cpsc.gov/recalls. Making baby food safer. What's at stake? Because their bodies and organs are still developing, young children are especially vulnerable to serious health risks when exposed to toxins. That's why it was so troubling when recent CR tests found that 2/3 of 50 baby and toddler products foods we tested contained measurable levels of at least one toxic material, known as heavy metal, including cadmium, lead, or inorganic arsenic. With the release of our report in the October 2018 issue, we called the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to do more to protect the public. Specifically, we urged the FDA to set a goal of eliminating calcium, lead, and inorganic arsenic in baby and kids' foods beyond the lowest amount measurable by current technologies. And we suggested the FDA set incremental targets for companies as they work toward reaching that goal. In addition, we believe the FDA should, by the end of 2018, finalize its guidelines limiting inorganic arsenic in apple juice to 10 parts per billion, ppb, and limiting inorganic arsenic in infant rice cereal to 100 ppb. Last, it should revise existing guidelines for lead in fruit juice from a limit of 50 ppb to 5 ppb, the standard for bottled water. Parents can limit their children's exposure by serving a variety of fruits, vegetables, and grains, and limiting intake of infant rice cereal, sweet potatoes, and packaged snacks. And you can sign up to CR's petition asking the FDA to improve new limits on heavy metals at cr.org/babyfood. Helping families fly together. As the holiday travel season approaches, kids and their caregivers could find themselves separated on lengthy flights. To avoid this scenario, Congress passed a bipartisan law in July 2016 directing the U.S. Department of Transportation to review and, if appropriate, establish a policy ensuring that families traveling with kids 13 and under would be seated together at no additional cost. Now that more than 2 years later, the DOT has determined that such a policy as not appropriate, but has done so without soliciting public comments, calling for public hearings, or making any public statement to the matter. Meanwhile, some U.S. airlines continue to charge fees or higher fares for passengers needing to sit together. Beyond the financial penalty, current policies pose other risks. A recent FBI report noted that sexual assaults aboard commercial flights are rising and that the victims have included unaccompanied minors as young as 8 years old. CHR has your back. Under the Freedom of Information Act, CHR has written to DOT Secretary Elaine Chao requesting that all relevant information pertaining to the DOT's implementation of this policy. What you can do, contact your representative at congress.gov and tell them to press the DOT to implement and enforce the law, and learn more about What the Fee campaign at whatthefee.com. Before we close out, let's do a couple of letters from this, too. An October cover story, What's Really in Your Meat, investigated the presence of trace amounts of banned drugs in meat and potential health implications. To join the conversation, go to cr.org/meat1218. Thank you for the fascinating article. A number among the thousands of individual or family beef producers in the U.S. care deeply about their land, animals, and consumer products. The conclusion of the article rightly states that the USDA organic label is not a guarantee of the quality of your food. Getting to know and supporting your local farmer through CSAs, community-supported agricultural farms, farmers markets, or buying directly from a producer is a fantastic way to ensure that you are consuming an animal that was raised with conscience and pride and high standards. After all, it is what we serve our own families. Rita Geisen, Mountain View, Missouri. Thanks so much for the article about drug detected in animals ending up on consumer plates. I appreciate CR looking out for its readers' health. Our regulatory agencies are failing us and endangering public safety when they don't enforce the laws and regulations governing the agricultural industry. We need to demand change and expect it, but it will likely be a long time before we see any reform. The other solution is to avoid or reduce our consumption of animal-based foods and consider alternatives such as plant-based diet, which is easy to transition towards with all today's varied products and the information available. Analua Waterlich, Las Vegas. And with that, we've run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast on our website, TriangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thanks so much for listening.